This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Important principle, which was a big chiddush in a sense, that is that godliness and emes, godliness and truth are not synonymous. That when Chazal say Chesmo Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes, that the signature, the seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes, that means that if you want to know if God is behind it or not, you've got to check whether it's true, not the other way around. You don't decide whether the thing is true or not by checking whether God is behind it. And we discussed last week how wrong our society is going in that sense, in that area, at the moment. We developed that theme a little bit further last night. That anything that looks godly to us, whether it's an individual who looks godly, or whether it's an event that looks godly because it's mysterious and it's miraculous, we immediately attach an assumption that therefore there must be truth. And we showed last week that that's not so. There is such a concept as Novi Sheker. He's a prophet, but he's a lie. The Torah doesn't say that he's not a prophet. The Torah doesn't say, Al tishmo lo ishohu, don't listen to that man. The Torah says, Al tishmo la novihu, don't listen to that novi. He is a novi, and his novius comes from the Ribbono shel Olam. But what he says is sheker. It's a novi. Sheker is a prophet of falsehood. There can be such a thing. We talked about all the black magic and all the witchcraft, that it is possible through Kriya Chatuma, apart from the art of illusion, one can also make things appear what they are not. It's the art of magic. But apart from the art of magic in its modern sense, which is merely the art of illusion, there is also the art of black magic, old style magic and witchcraft. There is a certain power which the Koach HaTumo has. The negative forces in the world have powers equivalent to the powers of Kedusha. And just as powers of Kedusha can perform miracles, so too can powers of Tumo perform miracles. And therefore, miracles and mystery and boogeymen have got nothing to do with our determination as to what is and what isn't true. We have to use our intellect to decide whether it's true or not. And once we've used our intellect to decide that it's true, then whether it looks godly or not doesn't matter. It has the stamp. It has the seal. You have some people who go into a butcher shop that says kosher on it, and they'll order veal. And they'll say, what's wrong? It says kosher. It looks kosher. What can be wrong? The answer is it doesn't have a stempel. That's what's wrong. It doesn't have a stempel. It's not kosher. And you'll have other people who will look at you. You'll go to a shop and you'll buy. You know how it is with the Yidden. We like to feel that we're not missing anything out, so you can buy now, particularly overseas, imitation bacon and all sorts of things like that. And you see you eating, and it looks like bacon that you're eating. The person says to you, how can you eat this? The same person that goes to the butcher shop that just says kosher, to the trade butcher shop that says kosher, because it looks alright, he buys. The same individual says to you, how can you eat this? It's so trafe, it looks so trafe. It has a stempel. If it has a stempel, I'm not interested in what it looks like. If it has a stempel and I've satisfied myself that the stempel is authentic, it's kosher. It looks like bacon to you, good luck, looks like bacon. There's no issue in the Torah that you shall not eat something which looks like bacon. It's kosher, leaving aside problems of marisayin. So it is with all matters of emes. We tend to look at the butcher shop, and if it looks frum, we look inside, and you see there's a man with a long beard inside, It looks okay, the meat looks good, you don't see any chazerim hanging around, you don't see any snakes and funny, creepy, cruelty things hanging around. It looks all right, looks like a normal butcher shop. We tend to think, must be all right. And if we were going to another butcher shop, which has everything stamped and sealed, and we're satisfied that the seals are all authentic, if it doesn't look at us right, we feel uncomfortable. That's wrong. That means we're judging by our emotions. We're judging by what things look like, not by what things are. The purpose of a seal is to enable you to make decisions irrespective of what it looks like. The purpose of a seal is to help you differentiate between two things that look the same. Or maybe even between something which looks treif but is kosher, and something which looks kosher but is treif. That's the purpose of the seal, to help you differentiate. When things are obviously different, you don't need seals. The seal, the stempel of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Aleph Mem Taf, Emes. If you see that seal, you know God is behind it. You don't see that seal, you know God is not behind it. We don't need a chosom to know that Buddhism is not Emes. For that you don't need a chosom. We see, we know, it's quite clear that it's against the Torah. We don't need a chosom to know that most aspects of Christianity are not Emes. Don't need a chosom. So what does it mean when it says chosom Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes? That's when you're looking at two people that look exactly the same. Both have long beards, both have long coats, both are Shomri Shabbos, both are from a Yidin. And they're saying opposite things. And now I've got to decide who is the one behind whom the Ribbono Shel Olam stands. I've got to make that decision on the basis of where's the Emes. And once I've decided where's the Emes, that's my decision. And not only two people who look the same, but if I'll come out that the one who looks treif is taka kosher, and the one that looks kosher is taka treif, good also. That's the confidence that an individual has to have in his ability to make these decisions. Because if we're going to give up that responsibility, if we're going to consider ourselves incompetent to make decisions of MS, then we're living in a fraudulent world without the ability to discern between fraud and authenticity. A very dangerous situation to be in. If we don't know how to tell the difference between a genuine 10 rand note and a fraudulent 10 rand note, one's living in a dangerous situation. The ability to discern between emes and sheker is the fundamental responsibility of every ben Torah. That's what we learn in Torah for, to learn how to do that. And if a thing appears mysterious, and if a thing appears very godly, that defies analysis, defies any ability to subject it to halachic scrutiny, it must be rejected. We don't know. It might be emes, might be sheker. I can't get involved in it because I have no way of discerning whether it is or it isn't emes. So, and that's why in our school we are reticent about those minhogim, those customs, even if they're accepted customs, which don't have their sources in the Gemara. Because we have no way of being satisfied where they emanate from. Who knows where they come from? All sorts of customs and minhogim, some of them are very kosher, very fine, some of them maybe aren't. We don't know. And so the Vilna Gaon and the school that follows him is particularly worried. Even so far as certain minhogim which are recorded in the Shulchan Aruch, if they don't have their sources in Halacha, if they don't have their sources in Gemara, we shy away a little bit. Who knows? Who knows where it originates from? Who knows where it comes from? If it's sources in the Gemara, I know exactly where it comes from. It comes from Sinai. That's where it comes from. If it's sources not in the Gemara, I cannot subject it to halachic scrutiny. And if I cannot subject it to halachic scrutiny, I keep a little bit of a distance from it. That concept is expressed very beautifully in a medrash which we've learned several times before in the beginning of Bereishis, in Parsha Ches in Medrash Rabo. Amar Rabbi Simon b'shor shebo HaKadosh Baruch Hu livrois es Odom HaRishon. When the Ribbono Shel Olam came to create first man, Nasu Malochei HaShoreis Kitim Kitim. The angels above grouped themselves into classes, v'chaburus chaburus, into categories. Mehem Emrim Al Yiboro. Some categories of those people said man should not be created. It's not a good idea to create mankind. Some said yes, it is a good idea to create mankind. Chesed Omer Yiboro. The group that held by chesed, by kindness, that man should be created. Shehu gomer chasodim, because man is capable of kindness, and therefore he's going to bring kindness into the world. He will make a valid contribution, an important contribution in the olam. You must create man. The emes oimer. Emes, truth came along. What did he say? Al yibor. No. We're better off without man. Shekulo shkorim. He lacks integrity. Better off not to create man. Tzedek oimer yiboro shehu oseh tzedokus. Righteousness says, let's create man. He'll do tzedokah, he'll do righteous deeds. It will be good for the world to have man around. Sholom oimer al yiboro. Sholom says, don't create him. The kulik tota is always going to be arguing, faribles, machlukes. We're better off without him. Me'osu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? So here you've got a situation. Kindness and righteousness want man. Truth and peace don't want him. Notal emes v'ishlichoy loretz. He took hold of emes, says the Medrash. He took hold of truth, and he threw him down to the land, down to the earth. Hadu dichtiv v'tichloch emes arz. So that's what it says in the posuk, and you threw emes down to the ground. Amru malochi ashore, so the angel said to Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Olamim, ma'atom mevazet chosim al tichsi yeshaloch. How can you discard, how can you disgrace your most precious belonging? Emes, there's nothing more precious than truth, than emes. That's your chosim after all, it's your signature. Answers the Ribbono Shalom. No. Tale emes min ha'oretz. Let emes, let truth come up from down there. That's where it should be. We're not going to analyze this medrash in great detail. We've done that before, and in Yitzhak Hashem we'll do it again. But there's one aspect which needs to be understood. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam gain by all this? Emes and Sholem say, don't create man. So he takes emes, he doesn't destroy emes. If he would destroy emes, I would understand. He throws him down to the earth. And Sholem, peace is still up there. So how has he resolved the conflict? Has he just kicked Emes out of the room? What kind of democracy is this? Takes a vote, and it's 50-50. So he takes Emes and kicks him out of the room. He says, let's vote again now. Now we'll have a majority. Is that how he worked? What does it mean? He doesn't destroy Emes. Emes is still there, just that he's downstairs. One must say that once the Ribbono Shel Olam had thrown Emes out, Sholem was satisfied. Even Sholem was prepared to back it. Why? Emes is not destroyed. At this point, the Ribbono Shel Olam introduces an important change into the concept of Emes, of truth. He moves away from an absolute to a, we can't say a relative, that would not be correct. He moves from an absolute truth to a semi-absolute truth. And he says, humanity is going to decide what is emes and what is not emes. Not me. We're not going to make those decisions up here, because you're right. If we decide up here what is absolute truth, and then we put man on earth, then one of two things are going to happen. Either he's going to have to compromise truth, or he's going to have to compromise peace. But there's no way that he will be able to be faithful to absolute truth and to be able to interrelate with one another with Sholem, with peace. It's not going to work. It's necessary to introduce a certain flexibility into Emes in order that Sholem should not be interfered with. Truth will have to become flexible in order that Sholem remains untouched. Shalom remains an absolute. Emes is given over to the Chachomim. Emes, truth, is given over to Chazal to make their decisions al pi Torah. By the rules which I'll give them at Sinai, they will decide what is true and what is not true, and I, God, will bind myself by their decision. And that's where we differ from all other philosophies and from all other religions. And it's here that all other philosophies and religions run into difficulties. They haven't got beyond this medrash yet. How do you reconcile the practicalities of living? Because that's what Shalom means. Shalom means to be able to live in a way that we can resolve conflicts. Conflicts with one another, conflicts within ourselves, conflicts between spirit and matter. How can I live in a world where I have to resolve conflicts? And I'm going to be true to a system of absolute MS, designed not for this world, because absolute MS is designed for a world that doesn't have matter. Absolute emes is designed for a world of the spirit. Absolute emes is designed for neshamas, not for people who have bodies and yetzirahs and fight with one another and have to do business with one another. That's not what emes was designed for. And if I'm going to take spiritual emes in its absolute, unadulterated form and come down to this physical world and trying to live with shalom, that can't be. And so we have the Catholics who don't know what to do with the principle of divorce. Divorce is against the principle of MS, of absolute MS. They don't know what to do with the principle of contraception. V'chein halo and halo, so on. And every time they change their minds, it's a major problem because they have no basis on which to take such decisions, except expediency. People are leaving the church, so we must change our minds. They don't have a Torah Shebaal Peh. They were not given systems at Sinai which enable them to work with MS and to make decisions which govern God Himself in matters of MS. It's not that God says, look, I've got my MS, you can make your own decisions there. God says, I will bind myself by your decisions of what is MS. Because in the final analysis, MS must lead to resolution of conflict. There's only one MS, there's only one truth. And therefore, if there's conflict, that can't be true. And you have to go down there and resolve those conflicts within the dictates of the halacha which I'll teach you. And when you've done that, your decisions bind even these upper worlds. We will be bound by your decisions of emes. This medrash is the bottom line, the absolute fundamental that has to be learnt, in fact, probably by anybody who starts becoming religious. This is the first medrash that they need to learn. Because if they can understand this, as difficult a concept as it is, they will begin to understand what Torah Shebaal Peh is, what Halacha is, what Psak is, how we can take such decisions, how we can live and how we can operate. A principle such as Chazokas, which we've discussed before. Torah says that you're not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos. So am I allowed to walk in the street on Shabbos? I might stand on an ant. That's if I'm going to be bound by absolute law. I can't walk in the street on Shabbos. Torah says you can't eat bugs. So can I eat vegetables? You can't, if you're going to be bound by absolute law. How can you eat a vegetable? And even if you've checked the vegetable, maybe if your eyes were better, you would see things that you didn't see now. And maybe if you had a magnifying glass, you would see things which you didn't see without it. And as science improves and technology improves and we get electron microscopes, maybe you'll see new bugs which you didn't even know existed. How can you eat a vegetable? Nor can you drink a glass of water. Nor can you breathe. Who knows what kind of organisms there are in the air that one breathes. So there would be no possibility of living if this didn't take place. We would not be able to resolve the conflicts between the physical world in which we operate and the rarefied, pure spirit of the emes, of the absolute designed for the Olam HaEmes, for a world of emes. This is not an Olam HaEmes. This is an Olam HaSheker. It's a world of untruth. It's a world of deception and illusion. And we've got to live in Shalom, in a world of illusion. That can only be done if we can govern Emes. If we have within our power the ability to resolve conflicts within the confines of Halacha. And that power was given to us at Sinai. With that in mind, one understands the famous Gemaras, which we've also learned before. Yevamos daf samachei amud beis. Omer Rabbi Yilo, Mishim Rabbi Yilo, Zub Rabbi Shimon, Mutar Loi Le'odom L'shanois Bedover HaSholim. In matters of Sholim, you're allowed to change the facts. In order to ensure peace between people, you're allowed to change the facts. Shne'emar Avicho Tzivo, Kotzim Lo Yosef, Onosono V'chud. When Yaakov died, Yosef's brother said to him, "Our father instructed us to ask you to forgive us." And Chazal said, "There's no such instruction. Nowhere did Yaakov instruct his brothers to do such a thing. Where did they get it? They made it up. It's a lie." From there we see, Mutar Loi La'odom L'shanos Bedover HaSholim. If as a matter of Sholim, one may change the facts in order to achieve Sholim. Rabbi Nosson Omer Mitzvah. Rabbi Nosson says not only is it allowed, but one is obligated to do so. Shneema Vayemi Shmuel Echelir Foshoma Shol Vahageni. Rabbi Nosson sends Shmuel to go and anoint David HaMelech, but Shol is still the king at the time. And Shmuel says, "How can I go to David HaMelech? If Shmuel catches me on the, if Shmuel says, how can I go to anoint David HaMelech? If Shol catches me on the way, he'll kill me." Says Shol, says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Shmuel, "Take an animal with you, and if you're stopped by the police on the way, you say you're going to bring a korban. You don't have to tell them where you're going." That comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. He's instructing Shmuel to be deceitful. For Sholem you're allowed to. The Beit Rabbi Shmuel Tana Godol Hasholem Sheaf Hakadosh Baruch Hu Shino Boy. Great is Sholem. Even the Ribbono Shel Olam changed the facts in, for the sake of peace. When Sarah laughed at the fact that she was going to have a child, she said, "How is it possible? My husband is so old." And afterwards, when the Ribbono Shel Olam repeats it and Avraham hears, the Ribbono Shel Olam says that Sarah said, "How can she have a baby? She's so old." Didn't say you're so old. It's not correct. That's not what she really said, but the Ribbono Shel Olam changes it for the sake of peace. So we have three cases that the Gemara brings where we see that the Torah allows the facts to be changed for Sholem. That's based on this Medrash here, that the Ribbono Shel Olam took Emes. He didn't throw Sholem and say compromise Sholem for the sake of Emes. He said compromise Emes for the sake of Sholem, for that's not even called a compromise. Now there's certain Medrashim in our Sedra which clarify this principle a little further. Before one comes to a city to attack it in warfare, we have a chiyuv, a koroso eleha l'sholim. We have to give the city the opportunity to make peace. No matter what's going on, what the reason for the war is, unless it's Amalek, we have to give them the opportunity to make peace. Says the Medrash, Re'e kamahu koicho shel sholim. See how strong is the power of sholim. Bo'o re'e, come and see. If an individual, if a human being has somebody he dislikes, he plots and schemes how he can trip him up. What can he do? And he will even go so far as honoring a powerful person to do harm to the person whom he hates. So if A hates B and X has power, he will go and pay X a lot of money and show him a lot of COVID in order that X should undermine B whom he hates. That's how people operate. Can you imagine how idolaters anger the Ribbono Shel Olam? Can you imagine the anger that he has every day that they exist? There they stand. Imagine a situation, you have a child and you feed the child, and the child says, "This food is wonderful. I really owe a deep debt of gratitude to the Reverend Moon, because without him I wouldn't have this food." You educate him, "Oh, I owe the Reverend Moon a great gratitude. Without him I wouldn't have this food." Imagine how angry a parent. What's he going to do with it? Who's he? I'm paying for it. I'm giving it to you. Every morning the Ribbono Shel Olam gives them chesed, he's kind to them, he keeps them going, and they bow down to their idols and they worship their idols, no recognition of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Imagine the anger. They go to sleep. And all the souls come up to the Ribbono Shel Olam at night time. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam do? Say, ah, now I've got you. Tomorrow morning you don't get your neshama back. No, next morning he gets his neshama back. It's not one has nothing to do with the other. You've entrusted your neshama to me, I will live up to the trust. The fact that I hate you is no reason for me not to live up to trust. And here we get an understanding when the Medrash brings this as an illustration of Godol Koicho Shel Sholem, the power of Sholem. One gets an idea as to the definition of Sholem. Sholem doesn't mean that God will never punish the idol worshippers. Sholem doesn't mean that you have to forego justice. Sholem doesn't mean that you're not entitled to make a stand on an issue which deserves to have a stand made upon it. Sholem just means that you can carry on civilly at the same time. Life doesn't come to a standstill while you're busy sorting out issues and problems. A judge might have to decide against a litigant that he has to pay in R1 million, or that he has to go to jail for 10 years. That doesn't stop the judge on his way out from saying Shalom Aleichem to the litigant, inviting him home for a cup of tea. The one has nothing to do with the other. I have to perform justice, that's my job. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk to each other. That doesn't mean that there's no Shalom. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, for your idolatry I'll punish you. But you've entrusted your neshamas to me, I'm not going to use that as the way of punishing you. Other ways of punishing you. Sholem is the antithesis of milchoma. In warfare, anything is permitted. In warfare, imagine that the two countries are in warfare, in a state of war, and a ship of the enemy runs out of fuel or has engine trouble and comes into a harbor of the other country. What are they going to do? Help it up? Help it out? Fill it up with fuel and fix the engines and send it back to carry on the war? No, in war it's allowed not to do that. You've come in, good, we'll capture you, we'll lock up your sailors and we'll keep the ship. That's allowed in warfare, but not in Sholem. In Sholem I might have an argument with another country, there might be a problem, there might be an issue, but if their ship comes into my harbour, if they've entrusted it to me for repair, I'll repair it and send it out. The one has nothing to do with the other. Sholem is the ability to carry on life as normal and to carry on relating to people and working practically irrespective of the issues involved. The issues need to be treated, but the life doesn't have to be broken down because issues need to be treated. Even the Ribbono Shel Olam carries on life as normal, although he knows he's going to have to punish his Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But that doesn't entitle him to be Yochel, so to say, to play tit for tat and to take this for that. The one has got nothing to do with the other. Sholem is that maturity which comes from an inner security, from not being threatened. I'll deal with you in the right time. Meanwhile, I have nothing to do, nothing to change our normal way of relating. The Medrash goes on to tell a story which gives us insight into this whole concept of what it means that Sholem can be that emes can be compromised for the sake of Sholem. Does it mean that emes, the truth, is less important than peace? Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Meir she'yoshev v'derish. Rabbi Meir was giving a shiur, was giving a drosha on a Shabbos, and sitting there was a woman listening to the drosha. Holcho iso isho leveso. That woman went home, shehu yoleil Shabbos, because it was Friday evening. Umotso haner shelo shekovo. She came home and found the candle was out. Lights were out. So you can imagine her husband was already in quite a state. He was sitting at home and the lights had gone out. I suppose the chant was getting cold as well, the fires had all gone out, and the wife is nowhere to be found. She's busy learning. Amar lo bailo, her husband said to her, Heichan lo yis, where have you been ad achshav up till now? Amar lo shomas hayisi le Rabbi Meir derish. I've been listening to Rabbi Meir giving a drosha. Do you know what it is to hear Rabbi Meir giving a drosha? Do you think any self-respecting individual would sacrifice such an opportunity? The great Rabbi Meir is giving a drosha and I'm not going to be there? A similar medrash, by the way, appears in Vayikra, and there she says to him, I was listening to the sound of the drosha. And the Meforshim on the Dayak, that she couldn't understand the drosha. That didn't matter. She went to listen to hear the sound of Rabbi Meir's voice. That in itself was worth hearing. Seeing Rabbi Meir, certainly it doesn't say that she could see him. She was probably sitting behind quite a hefty mechitza. She might not have been able to see him. All she could hear was the sound of his voice. She didn't understand the word. Doesn't matter. That was Torah for her. That was the best she was able to. And from that alone, she could achieve an immense development and progress. And this man was a cynic. Amalo, he said to her, "Bekach v'kach einat nichneses lebeisiyat shetelchi v'taruchi befonu shel Rabbi Meir." What, he says? I'm sitting here waiting for Friday night dinner, and you're busy listening to Rabbi Meir. I swear that you don't come back into this house until you've spat in the face of Rabbi Meir. That's it. We'll see where your loyalties lie now. Yotzo lo mi beisoy. So she went out of the house. He threw her out. Nigle Eliyozo chulotov Rabbi Meir. Eliyo Anovi appeared to Rabbi Meir. Omar lo yarei bishvilach yotzo haisha mi beisoy. Do you know what you've caused? He said to Rabbi Meir. There's a woman in the town who's just been thrown out of her house because of you. And Eliyahu told Rabbi Meir what had taken place. May also Rabbi Meir, what did Rabbi Meir do? Holach b'yoshav lo b'beis hamedrash agodu. He went and sat in the main shul, in the big beis hamedrash. Boso iso isha l'ispalu. That woman came to shul. What do? You're thrown out of your house. Where do you go? You go to shul. There's no beis hamedrash. Ispalu, learn. She goes to daven. V'ro iso. And here, Rabbi Meir sees her walk in. Also, and he made himself appear ill. Held his head, he looked very sick. Omar, and he said, "Mi yodea lilchush la'ayim." Who knows, there was a particular remedy of spitting in the eye, that the saliva in the eye was able to clear an infection, if I say what it was exactly. And he says, "Is there anybody who knows how to do this, who's skilled at this?" Omar lo yisa ishani. She says, "I came for that purpose." Raka called the phone up. She spat in his face. Omar lo, and he said to her, "Imri labale chare rokati befono shel Rabbi Meir. Go home and tell your husband I spat in the face of Rabbi Meir." Omar lo, he said to her, "Lechi hisratzi labale. Go and appease your husband." Ra'ei kama godolu koichu shel Sholem, says the Medrash. Look how far Sholem goes. In the Medrash in Vayikra, it goes further and it says that the Talmidim said to Rabbi Meir, "Did you have the right to humiliate yourself and to humiliate the Torah to that extent?" And he answers with a din of Rabbi Akiva, with a statement of Rabbi Akiva, that the Ribbono Shelem says, "B'shor she'odo mekani liyishto." If a man is suspicious that his wife has been having an affair, then there are certain halachas which he must follow. He must warn her in front of Adim that she's not to be seen with that man. And if he warns her correctly, and later on there are witnesses that once again she has been seen privately with that man, then he brings her to the Beis Hamikdash, to the Kohen Gadol, and they write the Megillah Soito, they write a certain part of the Parsha of Soito on a parchment, which includes the Ribbono Shel Olam's name, and they put it in the water, which she then has to drink. But it comes out that you're rubbing out the Ribbono Shel Olam's name. As you immerse it in the water, the ink dissolves, and the Ribbono Shel Olam's name is being rubbed out. Isu Doraisa. Hashem HaKodesh HaNichdav Bikdusho, the holy name, the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is written Bikdusho. Yimoche Alamayim, let it be wiped out by the water. So that to re-establish peace, shalom bayis, between the soito, between this woman and the husband, the Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared to allow that. And Rabbi Meir says, if the Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared to allow his name to be wiped out for the sake of shalom, what question is there that Rabbi Meir must do the same? That's the medrash. Many difficulties in this medrash. We'll only have an opportunity to notice two. The first, why does Eliyahu HaNavi say it's because of you that the woman's been kicked out of your house? What did Rabbi Meir do wrong? Rabbi Meir gave a drosha, that's all he did. If she knew that she was there at risk of her shalom bayis, maybe she shouldn't have been there. What's it Rabbi Meir's fault? Secondly, we've learned that you're allowed to tell a lie for the sake of shalom. Why did Rabbi Meir have to have a spit in his face? All he had to do when she came into shul is say, "My lady, I'm sorry you've had such aggravation. I want to learn a piece of Gemara with you." And he should have opened the Gemara in Yevomis Daf Samachay, the Gemara that we learned, and shown her how, for the sake of shalom, one is permitted to tell a lie, and say to her, "Go back to your husband and tell him you spat in the face of Rabbi Meir. So tell him a lie. I'll support it. If he comes and asks me, I'll say yes. For shalom, you're allowed to tell a lie." Why does Rabbi Meir have to go through the whole charade of making her spit in his face when you're allowed to tell a lie for shalom? From here we understand the essence of this halacha. Nations get very upset if you abuse their flag. I remember there was a case in Israel recently with an Austrian flag. Austria nearly went to war over it. Big mice, come out and abuse a flag. People also get very upset if you abuse their names. If you deliberately mispronounce somebody's name, I get terribly upset. There's nothing more irritating than to deliberately mispronounce their name over and over again. It's very irritating. And certainly if you disgrace their name, if you belittle their name, they get very irritated. The chesem of the Ribbono Shel Olam is emes. The Ribbono Shel Olam's flag, his seal, his signature is emes. Aleph Mem Taf. There is nothing more disgraceful to the Ribbono Shel Olam than compromising that seal, those words emes. Aleph Mem Taf. To spit in his face, in the Ribbono Shel Olam's face, to serve idolatry, all that's very serious. But to deny his seal of emes, that's the worst of all. And when we told in the Medrash and Bereishis that the Ribbono Shel Olam took emes and threw it down in order to preserve shalom, what the Ribbono Shel Olam is saying is, if there's no other way, I'm prepared to suffer total indignity in order that there should be shalom. It's not that emes is less important than shalom. It's not that truth is more important than shalom. It's the ultimate of God's indignity which he's prepared to put on the line in order to preserve shalom. So what do people learn from that? People learn from that, you see, you're allowed to tell a lie for the sake of shalom. If you're allowed to tell a lie for the sake of shalom, Rabbi Meir would have told the lady to tell a lie to her husband. You're not allowed to tell a lie for the sake of shalom unless there's nothing else, no other option. If there's any other option whatever, you're obligated to pursue that first. Telling a lie is an absolute last resort. And usually, what are the other options entail? Self-embarrassment. Eating humble pie, that's usually the way to resolve machlokes. One has to be able to eat humble pie. One dare not tell a lie when the option exists to take humiliation instead. That's what we learn from the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared to take emes, his chesom, his signature, and is prepared to have it wiped out, discarded, ruined, for the sake of shalom. Therefore, there's no pride that you can have which is more precious to you than emes is to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if the Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared to have emes wiped out, you've got to be prepared to have your signature wiped out. But one has to be careful, of course. If I say to somebody, you know, if ever you're in trouble, whatever money I've got, I'm prepared to lend you. There's no question about it. Or you say, thank you very much, in fact. I need to buy a new car tomorrow. Can I borrow the money? I say, 1 minute, do you not have any money of your own? You say, yes, sure, I have a lot in the bank. I have shares, I have Krugerrands. But you said you're prepared to lend me money. I said, yes, but first use your own. If you're in trouble, I'm prepared to lend you money. Says the Ribbono Shel'Olam, I'm prepared to have MS discarded for the sake of Sholem. But only after you've tried your own dignity. Don't come and sacrifice my dignity before you've sacrificed yours. Rabbi Meir sees that if this woman will spit in her face, that will solve the problem. No need to tell lies. You can do it with the truth. It means I'm going to be humiliated. The Ribbono Shel'Olam is also prepared to be humiliated. Telling a lie is a disgrace to the Ribbono Shel'Olam. What right have I to disgrace the Ribbono Shel'Olam when I could achieve the same results by disgracing myself? That comes first. And so the Yesod, the principle of that mutar l'shanos mipnei ha'sholem, that one is permitted to change the truth for peace, means one is permitted to offer one's own dignity up. And even if there's no choice, even God's dignity one's permitted to offer up. But only as a last resort. Emes is very important. One cannot think that sholem is more important than emes. No. It's just that absolute emes, sometimes on rare occasions, cannot exist hand in hand with sholem. And if it's necessary, one has to be prepared to make modifications in the reporting of facts. This isn't in principles. One can't do away with Shabbos for the sake of sholem. One can't do away with kashrus for the sake of sholem. This is only in the area of reporting facts that one can do it. Or, in a sense, if we will interpret sholem a little more widely and say, for example, the chai bohem is also the same principle. If I'm told I kill you or you mechal Shabbos, your life or Shabbos, the din is I've got to give Shabbos up. That's part of the same principle. In order to make it practicable, in order to make peace, if there's no way out, or the only way I can save my life is by being mechal Shabbos, I'm allowed to be mechal Shabbos. But if there's some other way out, if I can manage to keep Shabbos, the only problem is I'm going to not have a penny to my name. I'm not going to have a friend in the world, but I will survive. Then I'm not permitted to be mechal Shabbos, because there is a way out. We can only compromise God's dignity if we've tried everything else. But to preserve our own dignity while we happily sacrifice the Ribbono Shel Olam's dignity, chas v'sholem, that we're never allowed to do. The Ribbono Shel Olam teaches us that we can sacrifice his dignity as a limud to teach us how disposable dignity is if it's going to lead to sholem. How disposable one's dignity is if the results can be peace. Sholem is a very wide concept. Peace doesn't mean only peace between different people and peace between nations. Peace also means, and perhaps its most important meaning of all, is peace within oneself. One has to be able to live in peace. The Simcha Zissel says that the Shemona Esra ends with Hamavorech Asamu Yisrael Basholim. God sanctifies, blesses his people Israel with Sholem, because Sholem, which he defines as Menucho, as peace of mind, is Tachlis Kol Habriyo, is the ultimate of the entire creation. Sholem. Sholem means being able to be settled, not to be torn apart. And the first requirement of Sholem, in fact, is internal Sholem. Sholem within oneself. That requires great strength. Peace doesn't require weakness. People think that giving in is the way one develops peace. It's not. Giving in, all that happens is you make peace with your friend and you get an ulcer inside yourself. That's not Sholem. You haven't achieved Sholem. You've just swapped enemies, that's all. Made peace with that one at the cheshbon of that one. That's not called Sholem. Sholem is a resolution of conflict. Not a movement of conflict from one area to another. This man has a problem with his wife says, you shall not go to the shir. He says, I shall go to the shir. So they make a compromise. They'll go once a week, not twice a week to the shir. So the wife is cross that he's even going once a week, and he's cross that he's not going twice a week. Where's the sholem? What's been done? Compromise is not sholem. That's not sholem. Sholem is finding ways of resolving the conflict, that one feels peaceful within oneself and one feels peaceful with others. One needs tremendous strength in order to have sholem. And one needs consistency. Reb Aaron Kotler brings a fascinating concept from a Tosfos in Chulin Daf Kuf Kafalech. Chizkiyo is an Amoira, makes a statement in the Gemara. Ask the Gemara, Mi Oma Chizkiyo Hochi, did Chizkiyo really say such a thing? And brings another quotation from the same Chizkiyo, which says the opposite. Asks Tosfos. The Gemara could have asked better. There's a Mishnah against Chizkiyo. Chizkiyo says something, but there's a much greater authority than Chizkiyo against himself. There's a Mishnah against him. Why doesn't it ask the Kasha from the Mishnah? Answers Tosfos, the Chizkiyo Achizkiyo Nicholeli Kshuyo. The Gemara prefers to ask a contradiction from Chizkiyo onto himself. You're contradicting yourself. That's more favorable. That's a better question than asking from the Mishnah. Afagav davi matzi l'kshuyo belav achim imas nisim diktoni. Explains the Baron Kotler. On the surface, this seems to be wrong. If I make a statement and there's a Mishnah against me, I'm really in a fix. There's nothing I can do. But if I make a statement and you tell me that a year ago you said something else, I can say, no, I've changed my mind. It's an easy way out. Says the Baron Kotler, inconsistency within a human being is something intolerable in a Torah personality. So great levels we're talking about, we're not holding there, but it's something to which one has to realize that we have to aspire, and something we have to recognize and respect in those people who possess it. That there are no steers in themselves, there are no contradictions in themselves. What they believe is the way they live, the way they expect others to live is the way they live themselves. That the way they live today is the same principle as the lines that they live upon tomorrow and the lines they lived upon yesterday. There's a certain integrity to their whole scheme of living. There's an internal shalom. They're at peace within themselves. And if we combine these two yesodas, our first principle, that one has to be willing to sacrifice one's dignity for peace, and our second principle, that one has to have peace within oneself and there has to be consistency, and then one begins to realize the biggest enemy of peace is pride. Not emis. The biggest enemy of peace is pride. Peace among people, very often all sorts of things could be solved if people would put their pride in their pockets. If there's an issue at stake, the Torah doesn't ask us to compromise the issue. No? But if pride is at stake, the Torah asks us to compromise our pride. And with peace within ourselves, the same is true. How often do we find ourselves changing our systems, saying things which we don't believe are right, which we wouldn't normally say, so as not to enter into conflicts, or so we think, so as not to enter into conflicts. So we're standing among a group of grobber people who one of them says that utters an unpleasant or a dirty joke, and we feel in a smile or laugh at it for the sake of peace. What kind of peace is that? That's just swapping the enemy. So I've made peace with that Groberjung in order that within myself I shouldn't be able to live within myself. If I don't laugh at his joke, I'm going to be embarrassed, I'm going to be humiliated. If one isn't willing to sacrifice one's dignity, one isn't able to handle the concept of peace. That's the only time that we have to sacrifice our dignity, is when Shalom is at stake. Because that's the only time that the Ribbono Shel Olam is willing to sacrifice his dignity, when Shalom is at stake. And in order to retain our integrity, to stand up for our principles, to live a life which is systematic and which has an honesty to it, and a shalom where we're at peace with ourselves and with the Ribbono Shel Olam, we need at times to be prepared to do things which may appear undignified in the eyes of others. That's the only thing that enables us to retain that shalom. How sad it is that people take this chazal so often in too simple a sense and think that all it's telling us is that for the sake of peace, one's allowed to change the facts. The Yesod is that for the same sake of peace, as the Gemara says, not only is one allowed to change the facts, one is obligated to change the facts, but only as a last resort. Our first obligation is to try everything else. And 9 times out of 10 we will find that if we are prepared to be as flexible with our dignity as the Ribbono Shalom is prepared to be with his, for the sake of Shalom, a great deal of machlokes can be avoided.